The Science Show on RN. It's Reconciliation Week. We're walking together. And who better to mark it than Tiani Adamson from Adelaide. Once training as a vet, she's a scholarship winner and a recent sailor. Here she is with my friend and colleague, Natasha Mitchell.
I was doing that study for a while and really wanted to be a wildlife vet and help look after our ecosystems and preserve our natural habitats and environments. But as I was doing my study, seeing the commonalities in things that are coming up, certain species having certain trends and all those sorts of things, and became really, I guess, inspired and empowered by the lack of action on climate change at the moment and seeing the impact that that's having on wildlife and wildlife health. And so I actually swapped degrees halfway through my third year at Adelaide Uni in vet science and swapped into a Bachelor of Science in Wildlife Conservation Biology with the hope to marry Indigenous knowledges with Western science. So my intention is to be able to use our old knowledges and practices to nurture sustainable living practices on country and look after the land. So more land wellness, what can we do to keep things healthy rather than having case-by-case examples coming in with sick animals and treating them one by one. Let's have a look at this ecosystem as a whole. What's happening? What's going on? Let's change the health of the land and see the benefits into wildlife populations, human health, human mental health, and look at things more holistically. There are so many incredible Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander leaders that hold this incredible plethora of knowledge. And it's not that we don't know how to do it. It's that they've been prevented from doing their own practices on country for so long. And we need to be able to give the platform for those practices to come to fruition again. So there's all that knowledge there, and it used to be practiced for such a long time. And, you know, we're the oldest living culture on earth. We've up to 60,000 to 80,000 years of culture and knowledge, and the land was so well managed for such a long time. It's only within the last couple hundred years with industrialization and urbanization and that lack of sense of looking forward. You know, Indigenous cultures look forward into the future a minimum of 7 generations to see the impact of what's happening, of what they're doing right now in any area of life. And we've really lacked that in Western society. We've been really focused on individual gain in terms of money and greed and power, and it's really created a fractured earth that we now have to deal with accordingly, and that we need to bring back those old practices to help look after what was happening before.
But to what extent do you think those old practices might also have to evolve? They're living practices because the landscape has changed with urbanisation and land clearing and concrete and the whole bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And with time, things change and adapt and develop always. You know, we're always adapting and changing our ideas and what we're doing. And obviously the way that the land is now is very different to how it was 240 years ago. Still, the foundations and the principles of these practices are still so relevant to today. And we know for sure that if we had used our techniques with fire and backburning, fire stick burning, all those sorts of practices, which are highly important culturally and for the land, so much flora that needs to be regenerated through fire, that we wouldn't have had the huge uproar of fires across November, December, still now, and they're still going. And that's absolutely devastated Australia, devastated thousands and thousands of people in terms of their safety and security. Over a billion wildlife have been lost, which doesn't include bats, frogs and insects. It's just been absolutely devastating. And we could have prevented that if we allowed Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to continue practicing their culture and giving them the voice to be able to do that.
You've been on a big boat this summer. Yeah. It was a major deal. Where have you been?
Yeah, I had the amazing opportunity to board the CSIRO RV Investigator. So I applied for the Indigenous Time at Sea Scholarship. Last year was the first time that it had run. So we boarded this amazing, I think it's 96-metre vessel in Darwin, and did marine research from Darwin all the way down to Fremantle. So that was over the Christmas New Year period. So I had Christmas and New Year's on the boat, which was fun. And we were doing lots of different types of research in regards to We were using CPR, which is continuous plankton recorder, which basically takes in plankton, and we're able to see different plankton populations, diversity and abundance across different parts of the ocean. We were doing some work with the EZNet and microplastics, which is Elise Touri's PhD project. She's from Flinders University. And the other student that I was with, Sophie Gilby, she's also from Flinders University, and she was the other scholarship recipient. So it's a national scholarship available, and funnily enough, the two of us that got it were both from Adelaide, so that was really nice, showing the great science happening in Adelaide and the things that science students in Adelaide are doing, so that's awesome.
Back to the plankton, why is that important? Is that because plankton's a food source?
Yeah, so there's lots of things that we can tell from plankton and a lot of the babies of the sea. So we can look at what's happening in the water in terms of climate change and adaptation, eutrophication, nitrification, changing salinity. Yeah, we can see different distributions of potential bigger fish, what things are feeding on. We can just look at general populations if there's poor health of oceans in some areas. So that was really, really important. They tell a lot of different information about that. With the microplastics work, Elise is looking at a bit of plankton and zooplankton.
But whether they're ingesting the microplastics.
Yeah, so she's basically taking samples from the ocean and condensing them down and looking at if she can find any plastics within these samples. So there are some plankton and things in there, and she has been finding bits of plastic within that. So, but yeah, we took 2 mil of the sample, so 1/16 of what we had from one site. And already Elise had found, I think, 14 pieces of microplastics just within 1/16 of that sample. So that's absolutely crazy.
So the concern is that the presence of microplastics will change the habitat, change the food supply, change various cycles and systems.
Yeah, so there's huge concerns with microplastics because we don't know what they're going to do yet. We're seeing how much plastic is there and how much of a problem it is, but we don't have any long-term studies of plastic yet. It hasn't been a problem. But we know that BPAs and things leaching from plastics is a huge health concern to everything. And I think that's really concerning with regards to this. If we've got micro and nanoplastics, the smallest of creatures and both flora and fauna are able to absorb this, and that just cascades up the food web straight up to the top. So whatever's consuming that small organism then goes up and up and up to bigger fish and different species, crabs, everything is interdependent on this, and it becomes a huge problem for the whole food web. And then at the top, obviously humans, we're basically apex predators of almost everything, unfortunately. But yeah, it becomes a human health concern, which is why I think it's now become a problem. Microplastics and plastic have been a problem for wildlife and our oceans for a long time. But
we're so self-obsessed.
We are.
Now it's a problem for us.
Exactly. And, you know, they just did a study on human feces and found that the average person eats approximately one whole credit card's worth of plastic per week. So that's crazy.
I mean, one of the concerns there is that some plastics may be endocrine disruptors, so they disrupt our hormonal system, which might have all sorts of implications for reproductive capacity and systems, etc., in different species.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's huge health concerns in relation to that, and problems with BPAs and mental health, like you said, with reproductive health, digestive health. We don't know how far this can go. So it's a big health concern. We also did some seabird monitoring and monitoring of cetacean species with Eric. He does amazing work with birds in Tasmania. And, yeah, basically we're looking at the distribution and abundance of that sea life, and he's been recording that for quite a long time now, so that we can tell, again, the health of our oceans, health of our wildlife, and what's happening in there. So I think we found about 2,500 approximately individual animals and 25 different species, both migratory and shorebird species. So that was really cool. Some of these birds are coming across from Russia and China.
Siberia.
Yeah, and coming all the way across to Australia to come over here and have a feed while it's cold back home.
This was heading down from Darwin, down the west coast of Australia to Fremantle.
Yeah.
Life on board? Could you stick it out?
Yeah, it was great. I think 10 days was awesome. I could do longer, but one of the guys on the boat, his next adventure was 2 months, and he was heading into the southern seas down towards Antarctica. And I think that would be hard yakka. That would be really different. It's an incredible opportunity to spend life at sea, and I love being on or in the ocean, and it was absolutely amazing. But there's a lot of things that you sacrifice when you spend life at sea, whether that's definitely obviously relationship-wise with family and partners and friendships, but even simple things. You know, when it got really rough, I couldn't go for a run or get to the gym because I'd fall over. So all those sorts of things are different, and you don't have control over your food and a lot of those sorts of things. So yeah, it's definitely a different life, but an incredible opportunity to do science. And it's an amazing vessel with so much incredible equipment. And they've got these really cool ways of, you know, they might have like a shipping container lab. So they might be looking at weather for one period of time, and they'll put the weather shipping container lab on. They open up and scientists are working in there and doing work with that. They need to swap that out and do a different type of science. So they just swap the shipping container out and put it back on. Super awesome and really well set up. So, yeah, amazing. Really grateful for that opportunity.
Can you imagine where you might be in 10 years from now?
I actually have no idea where I'm going to be, but I hope that there's things that I hold strong. And I know that in my integrity and my loyalty to myself and my culture, that I want to be looking after our land and oceans in the best way for the land and oceans, not for Bob who wants to put a mine here or do this, that whatever's best for the health of the country, for the country and the people that live on there. And I hope that I'm able to continue to develop my own sense of cultural identity and help others to do the same, and to give the voice and the platform for Indigenous people to practice their culture and country and preserve and maintain that into the future. We're at such a critical time where so many of our old people are dying and getting quite sick, and we need to be preserving this knowledge so that we can integrate that into Australia, because that's Australia's history. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander languages is Australia's language. Our flag should be the true flag of Australia. There's so many things that we need to decolonise and work on, the education system, but there's such a long way to go. So I don't really know what 10 years forward will look like for me, but yeah, I've got 6 months of my study to go, and I hope that whatever career that I embark on after this allows me to really look after the land and look after our Indigenous people and cultures.
Tiani Adamson, our first ever Indigenous Time at Sea scholarship recipient, continuing her degree at the University of Adelaide, walking together this week. She was with Natasha Mitchell.